You know what else struck me tonight watching this Bruins team is that they can win in so many different ways. They can win when they're not, when they don't have their A game. And on some nights, they can win if they don't even have their B game. And the same can be said for certain players on the roster. Like, for example, tonight, and maybe the analytics will contradict this, but I thought that David Krejci, especially in the first half of the game, was not great. I just felt like he was bad in the faceoff circle. I thought he was kind of lackadaisical and a little half-assed with some passes and some turnovers, and just kind of seemed like he was a bit lethargic out there. But as the game goes on, he obviously gets a nice goal, a nice purposeful shot from Pastrnak meant for Krejci to tip it. And that's exactly what he did. He out-battled his guy in front and was able to get a stick on it and give the Bruins the lead at the time. And what that told me was like, and look, I've watched Krejci for a lot of years, so it's not like I didn't know this already, but it was just, you know, reaffirmation that there are guys in this team too, like the Bruins just have game changers and difference makers, and they don't necessarily have to have their greatest game, but at any moment they can impact the game. And that was another example, and that's another reason why the Bruins are so successful. And like, the goaltending is great. I mean, the goaltending is more than great. It's very important to have that. And the structure the team plays with and the swagger is all great, but they have game changers.
Yeah, and like you saw with the top line too, where, you know, I thought whether it was Smith up there or Pastrnak up there, like they had shifts where they had possession and they're creating some chances, but, you know, weren't converting into goals, weren't really converting into great grade A chances. But then all it takes is just, you know, okay, throw out the perfection line for an offensive zone faceoff in crunch time. Bergeron wins it, you know, get it towards the net and boom, you know, game winning goal. Like, same sort of idea, you know, like Jim Montgomery had a quote after the game in his Nesson interview where he said, like, typical Boston Bruins. And it's like, yeah, that's pretty much what this is becoming. Like, you just have guys who make a difference when it matters in the third period. And, you know, yeah, that the check line with Krejci tipping the Pastrnak shot and then the reunited perfection line off a faceoff, like both do it in the third tonight.
Yeah, Bergeron's goal. And then that, by the way, Pasta was double shifted because he was just out there with the check line and then he stayed on to take the faceoff. And especially towards the end of the game, you see that, you see Montgomery go to that because he knows, like, okay, he still has gas in the tank. Let's just use it. We'll especially in a close game, the way it was, and it worked out because Bergeron ends up scoring that go-ahead goal with like 3 minutes left. And then Pastrnak gets a goal into the empty net, but still not a bad goal. Still, like, shot it from all the way at center ice. So it was interesting to see the way that Montgomery kind of tinkered just like in the smallest ways throughout the game, because at one point in the first period, he did have Hall back on the second line, Pasta up on the perfection line, and Smith back with Coyle and Frederick for a shift or two. Wasn't really that long, but the tinkering was still going on.
There was lots of
tinkering tonight.
A lot of tinkering.
Montgomery was all over the place. He was having a field day. Like,
I mean, Scott, what was the most surprising combo that you saw tonight? I mean, there was Frederick, Greer, and Kopanen. I think every combination that could have been there was.
There was at least one shift with Foligno on the top line. There was a full Marchand, Bergeron, Foligno shift at one point. So
it was Hall, Bergeron, and Marchand.
Yeah,
he did a little bit of everything, and that's a good thing too.
Just sprinkling it in, just trying it out.
Little ice cream bar.
Well, I kind of got the impression, like, when he reunited the perfection line like pretty early in the first. Couldn't have been like more than halfway through the first period, and you're like, oh, that's kind of early for, you know, a 0-0 game in Montreal. But I kind of got the sense that, like, he felt like no one had really, you know, it had been like a little bit of a quiet start and no one had really provided the spark on the ice. And I just thought, like, he was like, okay, this is what I'm going to do to provide the spark. Like, you know, there hasn't been a big hit. No one's dropped the gloves. No one's, you know, made a great offensive play. All right, I'm going to do this and wake you guys up. And it seemed to work. Like, I thought they finished the first period stronger. It didn't result in a goal quite yet, but yeah, like I think he it was like, all right, this isn't Morgan. Like we're not awake, so I'm just gonna try to do something to get guys' attention.
You got to be three moves ahead, Scott. You can't be reactive. You got to be proactive. So he was trying to think ahead, moving the pieces around, tinkering, figuring it out.
I want to get to a couple of things real quick. I want to get to the state of the Bruins Canadiens rivalry, and maybe obviously it's kind of at a low point right now. There's not much going on, but maybe there's an idea in my mind that maybe could spark that again going forward. But before that, what did you guys think of?
I think I know what your idea might be, but we can get to it.
Okay. I think you know exactly what I'm thinking. But before we get to that, Bridget's like, what the hell are you guys talking about?
Apparently you're telepathic and I'm just missing something.
So
I am. This is proven. I said last podcast I had a gut feeling it was going to be Mark McLaughlin. It wasn't a gut feeling. It was a telepathic feeling.
Yeah. No, I had to make sure he didn't just call up his cousin and like get the inside information and pretend he was just a psychic. One of those fake psychics. But no, he might be a real psychic.
So we have a quick
disclaimer for anyone who doesn't know, I'm actually related to Mark McLaughlin. Just have to clarify that every time.
It's not really his cousin, but they're both from Billerica. So, and they're both McLaughlin, so they communicate telepathically.
So we have psychic Scott, but we also have transparent AJ. And I wanted to bring up the AJ Greer interview with Sophia in the intermission. I thought that was a nice interview. And Scott knows better than anybody because he did a one-on-one sit down for the Skate Pod for like, I think it was like 17 to 20 minutes. And I think Scott only asked for like 10. And I think
he would have gone for like an hour and a half, I think. So
you could tell like Sophia has like her questions that she goes to. I think she pencils in like a 45-second interview every intermission, but AJ just took the first question and ran with it. But I wanted to get you guys' opinions on some of the stuff that he talked about. He's a native of Quebec, I think the Montreal area, and he was basically asked like what it meant for him to play in Montreal and at the Bell Center, and he talked about it meant the world to him, and that, you know, there was a time in his life where he emptied his bank account to buy tickets to go to a Habs game. But he also talked about just how grateful and cognizant this Bruins team is of just the reality of the world. Like a lot of athletes, a lot of, you know, sports teams or leagues, whatever, they can kind of get caught up in their own little world. But he talked about how like the Bruins take a lot of pride in everybody who works within the organization, but also for everybody outside of the organization, like fans and family and friends who, you know, make everything worthwhile, and that they're not oblivious to the fan support on the road games and at home, always having a sold out building. And yes, he talked about all this in a intermission interview. So I thought it was a nice interview. He's a great person to talk to, and I wanted to get you guys' takes on that.
Yeah, I thought it was good. You know, you covered all the key points there, but we've gotten this vibe from the start. Like, I think you definitely heard it, like when I talked to him, you know, before the season, of just how appreciative he is of this opportunity and, you know, of just getting a chance here and of like what he's gone through to get here. And I think that's where like that appreciation for everyone else around him comes in, is because there's been times where he's needed some help from people around him and needed support and, you know, hasn't been able to do it himself. So, you know, maybe 4 years ago or whatever, he might not have had that, or, you know, might not have fully appreciated opportunities that he got or had, you know, wasn't able to take advantage of them. And you get the sense that like, he's just in such a better spot now of knowing, you know, how easily you can waste an opportunity if you don't really like hone in and do what you have to do to make the most of it. And I also feel like it's, you know, sort of related to this, like obviously he's playing more now because of injuries, but you know, for a while it's like he was rotating in and out as 12th, 13th forward. And I think he's really been like a perfect guy for that role, because for him, just being on a team like this and sticking in the NHL is huge. And like, he's so appreciative just of having that, that, you know, he's not going to be sulking around if he goes 2 weeks without playing or something. Which I think, you know, I asked Jim Montgomery last week when it became clear that like, or I think it was Saturday, when it was clear that Brandon Carlo was going to play Sunday, even after getting banged up. And, you know, I asked him, I was like, obviously this means it's another chance where Zboril might have been able to get into the lineup that he didn't. You know, like, how tough is this? And Montgomery said, like, there was a time where, like, it was really tough for, like, a month or so. You know, he could tell, like, it was tough on Zboril not playing. And he said he feels like his attitude's gone better now as he's kind of come to embrace the fact that he's still a part of this team and, like, they are going to need him at some point. But, like, that's just tough. Like, you know, Zaboro's a guy who's played at every level he's been at. Like, he hasn't been in this role before. So I think, you know, Greer is kind of a good example of, like, what you want as someone whose spot in the lineup night to night isn't guaranteed, but who's, like, obviously who's going to bring it when he does get in.
Yeah, and just to, like, put a finishing thought on the Greer stuff, like, he's been very reflective and open about, like, it just, you just get the vibe that he's being very genuine. And it's almost like we're seeing him, like, as he realizes, just, like, I don't know if you guys have ever gone through this where you're like, oh, my God, I'm doing it. You know what I mean? Like, you're like, I've been hoping my whole life for this. And you're like, oh, wait, I got to take a step and just, like, look around and be like, oh, wait, I'm playing at the Bell Center. Like, I'm here. It's just another good story, really, if you think about the work that he put in to turn things around for himself and where he's been able to, you know, get his life to. I think he got engaged in the off season and got a new puppy. And, like, he made the team and he's just it's nice to see him get to just reflect and have, like, a moment. Because I think he was just having a moment with his own thoughts, but the camera also happened to be in front of him with Sophia. So we get to hear a little bit of it.
Yeah, I thought it was awesome.